I had my children on the floor. I was on my favourite blanket that my grandmother gave me on the floor like a cat.
And I realised in that moment the potential of what our bodies can really do as women.
Like, I could feel his head. I could do my own internal, like, yeah, his head, I could feel it.
I was in tears. I was just in tears and overwhelmed with gratitude.
Hi, and welcome to the Natural Birth Podcast, the podcast that is bringing embodied birth wisdom from women from all over the world sharing their natural birth stories. Don't forget to subscribe and download so that you can always have access to these empowering and positive natural birth stories.
Hi, my name is Anna, and I am the Natural Birth Podcast host. I'm a former midwife turned midwitch, and I now work with women worldwide, assisting them in having an empowering and natural birth experience and to truly claim their birth as a rite of passage. I offer one-on-one sessions and packages and online courses for conscious mamas who don't want to leave their birth up to chance. I also mentor current and aspiring birth workers in my Sacred Birth Worker Mentorship Program. If you want to know more about me and what I do in the world, then please visit me at thenaturalbirthcourse.com or connect with me on Instagram as The Natural Birth Podcast. Now, if you love this podcast, then please consider taking a moment right now and leave a review. They mean the world to me and is also your way of helping me reach more women around the world with these natural and empowering birth stories. Together, we are changing the birth narrative, one birth story at a time. Today on the Natural Birth Podcast, we have Stella. Stella is a mama of two from Florida, USA. She works in the health and wellness space and lives a natural and holistic lifestyle. She went from being terrified of birth, thinking she would never have children because of her fears, to having two beautiful home births in the house that she and her husband built themselves. Her first birth was long and challenging, but she reached her goal of having an unmedicated home birth. But she still felt like something was missing. There were some things that happened during her first birth that she didn't want for her second, and she didn't have the euphoric birth experience that she knew was possible from all of the birth stories she had listened to. So she decided to go with an independent midwife instead of the birth center she did the first time. And her second birth was fast, magical, and practically pain-free, even though she had a shoulder dystocia. She shares all about how she faced her fears, how she prepared for each of her birth experiences, and the pearls of wisdom she learned from each one. She did a full 180 and is now fully obsessed with birth. Curious about Stella? Find her on Instagram as Stella Talky. This episode is sponsored by Informed Pregnancy Plus, a brand new pregnancy, birth, and postpartum streaming platform packed with informative and entertaining video content. Among their comprehensive and growing list of movies, you can watch iconic films like Ricky Lake's amazing documentary, The Business of Being Born, and the juicy and empowering documentary, Orgasmic Birth. The mind and body section includes meditations, yoga classes, fitness workouts, and belly dance for birth, all included within the subscription. You find workshops and book reviews and TV-style series on topics from fertility to breastfeeding and everything in between. I highly recommend this streaming platform to all my clients as well as my mentees in my mentorship program because there are brilliant resources in there. And the best news is that you can try Informed Pregnancy Plus absolutely free of charge. Just visit Informed Pregnancy TV and start streaming today. Hi, Stella, and welcome to the Natural Birth Podcast. How are you today?
I'm great, Anna. Oh my gosh, it's so amazing to be here with you. I've listened to you for years now. And yeah, I know I told you when I reached out, I really do credit your birth stories, your amazing empowering birth stories, to a lot of my success with my empowering births. And yeah, it's really a full circle being here and telling my stories. It's like, I can't even believe it, honestly.
What a pleasure to have you here. And you're coming with I guess it's not a unique story. It's maybe, you know, fairly unique story for this podcast, but it's very kind of common, I would say, in the general population of women fearing birth. You really feared birth to the point where you actually thought you'd never have children. And then you did a lot of work, which we will dive on into today, to change that. And then you ended up having two home births. Your last, you described, you know, was pain-free. And I love that you're coming to share this story. I think it's so empowering for women to hear. I hope this episode spreads to all the women who are really fearful of birth, who either, you know, might not dare to get pregnant or might think that the only way to then handle her fear is to go in to have an epidural, to be fully managed and controlled by the, you know, medical establishment. I hope that your story reaches them and that maybe that sparks something in them. So with no further ado, like, take us back to, why do you think you were so afraid, and how did you start to change that, and why did you feel like you needed to?
So honestly, my fear of birth, it really goes back to as far as I can remember, like, you know, thinking about it. And I know that my mom had natural births with all three of her kids, my two siblings, and she's, you know, was a very strong woman, very, you know, like, natural minded. I grew up in a very holistic environment. She was a nutritionist. And, you know, I think for her, it was, she didn't want the, you know, like, the drugs in her system, and she wanted to do it natural. She knew she was strong to do it, but she didn't describe them as, you know, like the women on your podcast described them as, you know, empowering. And she wasn't in her home environment. She did it natural in a hospital, which, in my opinion, seems a lot more difficult. I mean, when I hear stories of women who do it natural in the hospital, I'm like, I can't imagine that. But doing it natural at home, to me, is like a lot more, you know, easier to manage, in my opinion, without pain medications. But I remember, I think I was like 12 years old. My mom told me about one of the births, because she did, you know, describe them as very challenging and painful. And she mentioned how she did have an episiotomy with one of them. I don't know which of her kids it was, but the thought to me, I didn't know what that was. And she described it to me, and the thought of being cut open without pain medication, I was just like, it set a pit in my stomach. I'm like, that's what they do. I can't even imagine enduring that. And I can't believe that's what a lot of women do experience. And, you know, typically the more likely the hospital environment than home births or birth centers. So I think it really was just finding out what episiotomy was at a young age. Just like, really, I was like, I absolutely not. I don't think I can ever give birth. And then that kind of just stuck with me. I just kind of remember thinking that way for so long. And, you know, when I would tell my parents that, like, yeah, I don't think I'm going to have kids because I can't imagine having birth. And they're like, no, you have to, you know, someday. And I'm like, nope, not for me. But yeah, I think it was when I met my now husband, that idea of having kids really kind of, I'm like, oh, he's such an amazing person. He would be such a great dad. Like, I can't, you know, take that from him, you know, his opportunity to have children, because I'm so terrified of childbirth. So I'm like, maybe this is something I should try to face. And maybe if I learn more about it, it'll, you know, won't seem as scary to me. So I think my first, you know, kind of bit of research I did, I watched the Ina Mae Gaskin, her documentary. And that was already like very eye-opening to me, because they're like, you know, like the births they show in there look so beautiful and peaceful. And I'm like, wow, like that wasn't as scary as I thought. So I think my first, you know, kind of tip of advice there is for anyone who is really scared, which I know so many of my friends, I've told this story to so many people I know, because I know a lot of my friends remember me as always kind of joking about not having kids because I was terrified of birth. And they're like, wait, what happened? How did you just end up having a home birth after, you know, how much I used to talk about how terrified I was of it? But, you know, when I would like look up like peaceful birth videos, and I looked up hypnobirthing and watching all the hypnobirth videos, and you know, the more you kind of watch it and learn about it, it does just makes it seem you know, okay, maybe they're all not this like horror scene that you see in the movies, you know?
Yeah, no, it's really, education is power, isn't it? And I wish that more women who were afraid thought like you, that actually educating myself, looking at birth videos, because that's usually what happens, is that when you're afraid, at my experience, is that most women will not dare to even look. You know, it'll be really confronting to look at a natural birth. And
yeah, that's a good point.
But that is how you rewire your subconscious mind, isn't it? To hear and to see it over and over and over again.
I just kind of dove into the research and I started listening to podcasts. When I started listening to your podcast and hearing your birth stories, that was something that was really transformational to me as well. And read a couple books. I read the Hypnobirth book by Marie Mongan and a couple others. So doing that research just really felt like, you know, I was taking, like you said, kind of taking that fear and transforming it, you know, just learning about it. And, you know, the fear of the unknown is is really what I think was the biggest thing for me. And the more I learned, the more that my fear subsided. But yeah, and then falling pregnant for me, I mean, if you think that's what we should go into next, when my brother and my sister-in-law, they had a baby 2 years before I became pregnant, and meeting my nephew, I think that was another thing that was really big. And having that connection, that bond with him, I've never, you know, loved a baby so much, been so close to the baby. I'm sure for a lot of people, you know, meeting their nieces and nephews is the same way. It's really eye-opening and like, okay, I think I could do this. I think I want kids. And my husband and I planned to get married in 2020. And shortly before that, my mother actually passed away suddenly, and something we were absolutely not expecting. That was something, yeah, it was really one of those eye-opening moments. I mean, you know, just the thought that, you know, knowing she'll never be able to meet my kids and her, you know, her grandchildren was really sad. And it just, you know, made me realize like, time is, you know, you never know how much time you're going to have. You never know what opportunities you're going to have. And my husband and I both were like, yeah, why are we going to sit around, you know, waiting until I feel ready? I mean, you don't ever really feel ready for something like that. So, you know, we got married shortly after, and right away we're like, let's start trying, because, you know, you never know what's going to come next in this life. And having children is obviously something that's so special and an opportunity we knew at that point that we wanted to have. And I remember, you know, when I was first started taking pregnancy tests after we started trying, kind of being like wondering if that fear was going to come back when I saw a positive test result. I remember thinking, am I going to get that pit in my stomach that I used to think of, you know, when I thought of childbirth, or am I going to be okay with it? And sure enough, I saw that positive test result and I felt so calm. I felt happy and, you know, just excited. And I wasn't, you know, it was very shocking to me because it did happen very fast. It was, you know, pretty much our first try. And I felt pregnant, which I'm very grateful, very lucky that it happened that quickly. It's almost a good thing. I feel like it didn't give me enough time to have any more fear set in, but I did set myself up for success. And I'm glad I did that work ahead of time to manage my fears and learn about childbirth. And obviously I had, you know, the intentions of having a natural unmedicated birth, and I really wanted to make sure it was an empowering experience. So then from seeing the positive result, I kind of went forward with, you know, just continuing with that work and also prepping my body. I didn't know if I wanted to work with an independent midwife or a midwife at a birth center. So that was kind of my first thing, was picking a midwife, and then from there picked a doula. And yeah.
I love that.
So
beautiful.
Yeah.
So you chose to go with the home birth midwife in the end?
So we went with a birth center that actually offered home births. So the reason really I was leaning towards that, and also I it was all during COVID. So this was back in 2021. So a big reason for who I chose at that time was because there were so many of those strict COVID policies and the masking and you know, all that kind of craziness. And I wanted to have the most normal birth experience. I didn't want that to be a factor. I didn't want anyone, you know, telling me I had to wear a mask while I was birthing or anything like that. So we went to the birth center that was the most welcoming. They had kind of like an optional mask policy. And the midwives there, I remember meeting the main midwife, her name was Kim, and she just was so sweet and so experienced and so kind of welcoming. And their environment was very kind of like a, I don't know, it just felt very comfortable and welcoming. And when they said they do also offer home births for first time moms, that they would come to me, I'm like, that's great, because now I can kind of make that decision as I go if I decide I want to be in the birth center or if I want to be at home. So I went with them, and they only have 4 midwives on staff. So I would kind of get to rotate with all 4 of them and, you know, get to meet with them during my prenatal visits, so that it wasn't, you know, I feel like sometimes when there's too many and it's kind of like a bigger gamble of who you're going to get the day of. I did like all 4 of them. So I kind of liked also that for my first birth, kind of going into the birth center for my appointments, it felt more like, you know, it was like this kind of that formal experience of, you know, being pregnant. The second time I did go with an independent midwife, and I felt like I was ready for that because, you know, a little toddler at the time, and I didn't want to be running around to appointments. I wanted everything to be convenient. But yeah, so we did go with the birth center that offered home births for the first one.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And then my birth center also, they had doulas on staff as well that you could hire if you wanted doula support. But for me, that kind of felt like I was hiring a doula that worked with the birth center. It kind of felt like they were on a team. And I don't know, it kind of felt to me like I wanted to source my own doula just in case if, you know, day of, there ever were to be something to come up with the midwives that, you know, I disagreed on with them. I didn't want to feel like, you know, the doula feels like, you know, if they're obviously close with the midwives because they work together at the same birth center, that they would kind of take their side over mine. So I did my own research, searched my own doula. And I remember when, you know, she wasn't used to working with this birth center, because she's like, typically when women birth at that birth center, they pick one of their doulas as well. And she's like, I'm really proud of you for doing your research and kind of picking someone outside of that center, because she's like, that's something that some, you know, women wouldn't think about. And I think that is kind of a good point to consider is, you know, if your birth center, you know, maybe your hospital or whoever, if they have kind of those recommended providers, you know, having them all within a network maybe won't be in your best interest, you know, just in case. I feel like it's good to make sure you have someone that you know for sure is going to advocate for you no matter the circumstances. Yeah. And that kind of brings me to the next part of my story, because meeting my doula was a very, very transformational part of my journey. The doula I met, her name is Tanya Grazione, and she does childbirth education classes, and she's a mama of 4 herself. Her last 2 were home births, and her first 2 were very traumatic hospital births that, you know, as most people's stories kind of, unfortunately, but at least it's a catalyst into, you know, the positive and you know, doing something that's amazing work, you know, what you guys do and spreading the awareness of how beautiful birth can be, I think is one of the most beautiful and most important jobs there is, because how we're born is, you know, the start of our lives and the start of, you know, all the future generations. And it's unfortunate, I think, how many people don't take into consideration how important that truly is.
I know. I truly understand what you mean.
Yeah.
I think about that every day.
Yeah. So when I met Tanya, it was funny because the first meeting with her, like already she was just so welcoming, so positive, just one of those people who just radiates that positive energy. I get that from you too, just from listening to your voice. I'm like, this woman is, you know, probably part of the reason why I'm so addicted to listening to your podcast is because I feel like it just, you know, if I start my day with that, it kind of just sets me up for positivity throughout the day. But meeting Tanya, she was just saying, she's like, I absolutely love birth. She's like, if I didn't already have 4 kids, you know, I would do it again. She's like, sometimes I consider, her joke was like, sometimes I consider being a surrogate so that I can experience having birth again, you know, that experience again. And I'm like, wow, that's really funny, because I used to joke about needing a surrogate in order to have children of my own, because I couldn't fathom, you know, giving birth. So I'm like, that's really funny that her joke is the opposite of wanting to, you know, be a surrogate just to have babies again. And yeah, I remember leaving that meeting with my doula and calling my sister on the drive home. And I'm like, Megan, I am so excited. Like, I am so excited to give birth. I never thought, like, I knew I was going to get to the point of being ready, but I never thought I would get to the point of being ecstatic and so excited to have that experience. And, you know, it really did shift my thinking from a place of, you know, that fear of the unknown and fearing that it was going to be painful or whatever I was scared of, but moved me to, you know, a place of thinking, this is an experience that so few, you know, first of all, only obviously women can experience it. And, you know, women who choose to try to have, you know, a natural unmedicated birth, it's like, you know, everyone can do something crazy, like, you know, climbing a mountain or doing a marathon or jumping out of a plane. But how many people can, you know, enter that world of that natural birth environment and getting that experience and, you know, that influx of hormones and meeting your baby, you know, that clear mind. And it's just something that I feel like not enough women, and obviously your platform does an amazing job of that, of vocalizing and letting people share their stories of how magical it is, because never when I was growing up did I hear someone describe birth as being magical, as being empowering and being this transformational experience. I never heard birth described as that, and I didn't know it was possible. And meeting someone who did experience that, who felt that way, I'm like, wow, that can be me.
So powerful, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
I love that. So you've sourced your midwives, you've sourced your doula. Should we dive on into your birth story now?
Yes, I would love to. Yeah, I mean, my pregnancy was great. And I, you know, my doula was really good about kind of drilling into my brain the unknowns of, you know, when labor is going to start. Because, you know, you'll have a lot of women, I think when they work in the hospital environment, they'll say, oh, if you, you know, lose your mucus plug, then labor is going to start within a certain time frame. Or if this happens, then you're on this time frame. So she was really good about putting a very realistic, you know, expectation of first moms typically go beyond the 40 weeks. Don't expect anything more than that. And I was really prepared for that. I'm a patient person, but I did start feeling rushed at the end because of that 42 week, you know, kind of deadline that the birth center gives you. With after 42 weeks, you do have to transfer to a hospital. And at that point, I was so excited, so determined to give birth at home. That thought of being transferred to a hospital was, you know, really nerve-wracking for me.
Yeah. And this is the thing, I guess. Again, like I love that you bring this to the story, because this is the difference between, and not all independent midwives, in some countries, in some states, it means still if you have an independent midwife that at 42 weeks, they are no longer legally allowed to follow you through beyond that, but you have a bigger chance with an independent midwife to have someone who's like, whenever you give birth, you know, as long as you and your baby are feeling healthy and fine, you know, and there's a different philosophy. They're not bound to those things, those policies, guidelines, made up timelines.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
that is true to most birth centers are.
Definitely. And that's something I think I learned throughout my experience is being with the birth center. While those midwives were great and, you know, don't have anything bad to say about them, but they have more liability. They have more, you know, reasons that they do have to follow by those, you know, the arbitrary timelines and some of those arbitrary rules that they just don't want to risk getting in trouble, you know, for breaking. So towards the end, I did start to feel like I was on that timeline. I was getting kind of nervous about it. And I had been seeing an acupuncturist my whole pregnancy. My acupuncturist is someone who I became very close. So she kind of became honestly like a second mom to me. And she, you know, was saying, you know, if you're nervous, you know, we can do some of like the acupuncture induction techniques. And I was like, she was like, I do not recommend them before 40 weeks, but after 40 weeks, you know, if that's what you want, I'm comfortable with it. And I was like, yes, after 40 weeks, I want to start the acupuncture induction, because I was just starting to feel like, you know, I was on that timeline and I didn't want to risk going beyond the 42 weeks. And then after that time too, after the 40 weeks, when I was kind of in that limbo between 40 and 42, I did find out. So my doula called me and she unfortunately had COVID and she was very sick. If she was, you know, kind of feeling fine, I was like, honestly, like, I would rather you be at my birth than not. But she was very sick. It was very obvious that she wasn't going to be able to be there. And that was heartbreaking for me because, you know, I was so excited. I met her. I'm like, with her, I can do anything. Mm-hmm. But I just kept trying to remind myself. My husband was really great and comforting during that time because he did all the childbirth educations, everything that she offered. You know, he was right there with me and he did learn a lot from her. And he's like, I will be there for you. I will be your Tanya. You know, don't worry. Like everything, you know, everything works out the way it's meant to. And it was hard and it was difficult for me to see that in the moment because I was just feeling very dependent on her. Like she was the one who was going to kind of get me through and let me to have this experience. And after a day or two, I did kind of start to realize, okay, she built me up for this. You know, she got me ready and I can do the rest on my own. And I think, you know, we'll be okay. So it was 40 plus three that I went in for another round of acupuncture. And this time, you know, I was expressing to her that I was starting to kind of get nervous because obviously the first time we had done a little bit of what she would say, kind of like nudging my system to move things along. So this time she did kind of more of an actual, the induction techniques, induction points. And immediately after, so it was 9 a.m. that morning, I went in for my appointment. And immediately after, I went to the bathroom and I had lost my mucus plug. So I was like, wow, I guess things might be moving along. I'm interested to see if something happens this day. So I went home. I remember, you know, making some breakfast and I did start feeling the surges come on. And again, my doula really briefed me that they can start, they can stop, they can start, and they can, you know, be very low grade for days or even weeks. So I was very, you know, prepared for that. I wasn't expecting anything, but I know my husband and I, we did kind of go for a walk around the block and we did some curb walking and we started timing them at that point just so that I knew if they were consistent because it was hard. I remember, you know, the first time experiencing it, it's hard to kind of know when something is real or not. And timing it is kind of this double-edged sword because you don't want to feel like you're watching yourself, but you do need to know, you know, when to inform your birth team and when to know if things are getting consistent and if it really is labor.
Yeah, I mean, I totally hear you. And I think every first-time mama, you know, will feel this way because you don't know what it's going to feel like. And then when you've had a baby, you go like, well, you know, when I can't speak anymore, I know it's for real.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. The second time it's way easier to know, yeah. You know, what's real and where you're at kind of in that labor world. But the first time it's, yeah, it's just, you know, just kind of learning as you go. Mm-hmm. But I did have a chiropractor appointment that day also. So I remember calling my doula, I did advise her, you know, she was still there on the phone, ready to help me every step of the way. And she's like, yeah, I recommend still going in for your appointment. That's good to kind of, you know, get everything lined up, can help baby get in position if they're not there yet. And we didn't know gender. We wanted to be surprised, which was a big thing because my mom was surprised with all three of us. And then my husband, his mom, my mother-in-law was surprised with her two babies. And it's funny when I first got pregnant, she's like, please do it as a surprise. You know, it's, there's only a few surprises in life. And I'm like, oh, I already wanted a surprise. I love surprises. So we all were on the same page there that we're going to keep the gender as a surprise. So we went into my chiropractor appointment. And I remember I was kind of texting my husband from the table every time I had a contraction so he could keep timing them.
Oh, God, no.
And at that point, they were already like 4 or 5 minutes apart, and it was pretty consistent like that. So by the time we got in the car, he's like, these are getting really close. And it's been like that for a while. I'm like, okay, I think it's time. We should probably call the birth center and let them know. So we gave them a call just to give them a heads up. And they said to call us back when it's closer to like the 411, 4 minutes apart for 1 minute or longer and the 1 hour duration. So yeah, we went back home and I just tried to, my husband kind of made me some food. And I remember trying to just, you know, it was like drilled into my head what my doula taught me, you know, try to get a full belly, try to rest. Don't try to do all the things, just rest in those early stages and keep it more low key versus getting all kind of hectic and getting yourself all worked up about it. So I was trying to eat. And that's kind of when I realized, okay, this is really picking up because I couldn't even get food in my system. I just wanted to kind of be on all fours and was starting to kind of get a little vocal at that point. And it was starting to get intense. So I called my acupuncturist. She was going to come in and
be there, with me through the whole experience. So she was also like my, almost like my backup doula, which is great because she's been at many births before and very experienced in the space. So she came over and we still thought it was pretty early, even though they were about 3-4 minutes apart at that point. But I was starting to have some kind of difficulty, you know, coping with them. So we wanted to start with some comfort measures. She recommended I just get in my regular bathtub, and we had the plan to blow up the birth pool just kind of right next to it in the space in my bathroom. So I got in the regular tub while her and my husband were setting up the birth pool, getting it blown up and kind of getting our room prepped and everything. And I remember being in the birth tub, listening to the hypnobirthing meditations. And at that point it was like, you know, it was really working for me. I just felt very calm. I was doing kind of the breath work and I felt like I was really in that peaceful space of kind of managing and just with my breath. And I was kind of naively expecting that was how it was going to last, but it kind of quickly picked up to the point where it was way too strong for that. And I know I've heard a lot of people say like the hypnobirthing techniques don't always, you know, necessarily work for first-time mamas. I don't know what your thoughts are of the hypnobirthing techniques.
I have many thoughts about the hypnobirthing technique. I think that it's one tool, you know, but I think also that just as, you know, some women can experience birth as not painful, most will. And just that some women can go into a hypnotic state, be quiet and go through labor like that. That is their natural way of doing it and it suits them. Many women won't. And so I think it has the potential to make you feel like you failed. If you maybe roar your baby out, if you're really wild, or if you need other things. I mean, gosh, I've been at so many different births where I've had women everywhere from like having heavy metal playing like crazy, right? To like the most serene, quiet birth and everything in between and all kinds of places. And, you know, so I think it's one tool, you know, and I also teach about relaxation and kind of self-hypnosis in the sense of like affirmations and all things like that. But just some, you know, it's not all be all and end all, and it doesn't work for everyone. That's kind of my two cents about it.
That's exactly how I feel about it now. And that's how my doula feels about it as well. I mean, her whole thing is she talks about in her birth, she roared her babies out. So she prepped me for that as well. But I think I just had it in my mind that I wanted it to be this kind of, you know, kind of serene, quiet, because I am very, you know, into yoga and meditation. And I like that kind of quiet space. But yeah, it did definitely get to the point where I was being very loud and very vocal pretty quickly. So at that point, and I did, my sister actually lives in New York and she had planned to come down. I live in Florida. She was planning to get on a flight as soon as my labor had started to ideally get there for some of the birth, if not just, you know, for when the baby was born. So we called her, you know, shortly before I got in the tub so that she can get on a flight. And it was actually the last flight of the night she did end up making, which was great. Yeah, I was still in the birth, in the my bathtub actually hours later when she got there. And yeah, shortly after, it was like around 10 o'clock at night now. So I got on the acupuncture at 9 a.m. At 11, I lost my mucus plug. By 12 p.m., the surges kind of started. And then, yeah, somehow already it was 10 o'clock at night. I was in the bathtub and my birth team got there. And, you know, by that point, the contractions were so close. They were saying you can transition to the birth tub if that's where you want to birth. So I got into the birth tub. And another funny thing is there's a lot of birthday twins in my family. And the next day was going to be actually my grandfather's birthday, who has passed. But my dad called me that day while I was in labor. And he was really good about, you know, not being one of those people to text every day and saying, has anything happened yet? You know, he kind of just let me have my space and wouldn't kind of bug me about asking if anything was happening or when the baby was coming. Cause I know a lot of mamas too don't realize how much, you know, everyone has good intentions and I know that, but yeah, getting kind of checked in on too frequently can make you feel like you're, you know, a sitting kettle as they say it. I was glad that my dad wasn't putting that pressure on me, but he did give me a call that day and he's like, I just want to, you know, give you a little reminder. Tomorrow is your grandfather's birthday and
it would be so beautiful if the baby was born on your grandfather's birthday. And I'm like, well, good. That's awesome. 'Cause I'm in labor. He's like, wait, really? I'm like, yeah, I'll call you back in a couple hours. You know, if anything picks up or, you know, when anything happens, we'll keep you updated. But yeah, I'm pretty sure, pretty sure I'm in labor. So that was funny. And then, yeah, it's like 10 o'clock at night, I transitioned to the birth tub and things definitely were picking up. They were by that point, like around a minute apart. And I remember feeling like there was a lot of times where they were longer than a minute, where the contractions were, didn't feel like I had a break in between. And I really do think that could have been, I mean, I don't know, it may just have been how my first birth was. But I do think that it was from the acupuncture induction. I think it almost was acting like, you know, the way that I hear women describe their labors feel when they take Pitocin. It almost felt like that. They were very long, very powerful, very close together. And sometimes I didn't even have a break. And, you know, from all the education classes learning about how there's typically a break in between, I'm like, I remember shouting out like, where's my break? Where's my break? That one was longer than a minute.
Yeah, so, you know, it could be, and it could also just be, that's also normal, you know?
Yeah. I'll never know, you know, it may just have been how my first birth was going to go.
That's it. You just never know. But that is the thing, like for some women, naturally too, like they have the experience of maybe just having like when it's really kind of in the end and it's really full on, right? Not the whole way through usually, but in that end, it could feel like there's that, you know, the contraction kind of peters off and then it's just that kind of 30 seconds maybe in between and then it starts up again and the experience is that there's just no break. Yeah. You do get a little bit, you know, of a break there. It does, you know, the most important thing obviously to catch your breath and all of that for sure, but you know, is that the baby gets enough blood supply, right? The placenta gets perfused in that, you know, kind of minute in between. But yeah, it can feel also like, you know, just feels it's a lot. And
yeah,
birthing is a lot. And I think it's important to talk about it as that too. Yeah. And not to, you know, and there's nothing wrong. There's no failure. If it's like, you know, if your experience is hard, it is hard to birth a baby, whether it's short or long. Obviously long is longer. Yeah. So that's even more so. But, you know, birth is never really truly just easy. Like very few women would go like, yeah, I just, you know, just plopped out my baby, didn't feel a thing, you know. That just doesn't generally happen to people, right? And especially not the first time around.
Yeah. So yeah, I definitely had, it was challenging. They were long and they were intense with that first birth. And the midwife who was there from the birth center, so she did, you know, ask to check me quite frequently. I think it was protocol for her to ask every hour. And I didn't plan on being checked. I had that in my birth plan that I didn't want to. And she was, you know, she took it well when I said, no, thank you. She just kind of backed off. She didn't insist. But towards the end, when they were very close, it was obvious that I was, you know, kind of past that transition point. And she was checking the baby. You know, she had to check the heart rate, you know, every 20 minutes or so. And when she would check the heart rate, like towards that end, when they were very close, she was like, yeah, baby's right there. I can feel, you know, heart rate's right there. Baby's right there. And I felt like I was very close. And I remember when it hit midnight, we all were cheersing because we were like, yay, you know, baby can come now. It's my grandfather's birthday. And we all were kind of expecting it would happen on that day. So we were expecting that things would happen shortly after. Then I think around, you know, a couple hours later, when she told me, you know, if it's comfortable for you to start pushing, because, you know, we didn't really know where I was at. We knew they were very close, but she was just kind of offering if it's comfortable, if you feel like it's relieving to start pushing, then you can. And I started trying to push and I did feel like it was relieving. Like it felt like it was kind of just like putting my energy into something, felt like, you know, I was reaching that end goal.
Did you or her know by this point that like did you have the urge to push? Do you sound different, or did she actually check that you were fully when she said this?
She didn't check. I mean, I didn't want her to check, so I told her no, and she didn't, you know, position it as something she wanted me to do. She positioned it as if this feels good for you, you can start, because she did feel like where she could tell the baby, or she could assumed the baby was. she felt like I could be at that point where pushing was ready, but I definitely started pushing way too early.
Yeah, I find that very curious. I've ever only heard that from like hospital midwives or midwives that, you know, have a different philosophy than I do, that would have checked and said, okay, well, you're fully now. So now mm-hmm. you can start pushing. The idea that if you're fully, you can start pushing. But the thing is, 99% of women will have an undeniable urge to push when the head mm-hmm. has come as far down as it needs to, so that you mm-hmm. involuntarily, like your body pushes your baby out. Like, so I find this very curious that she would invite you to do that, not knowing that you're fully, first of all. I think if the body starts pushing and you're not fully, that's a different story. But to push when, yeah, I don't get it. No.
No, yeah, I completely agree. And I think that's a big, you know, thing to note here is I definitely started pushing too soon. And I wish, you know, in hindsight that I had waited until I had like the NER, the natural feeling to push. So I started pushing, you know, and this was 2 a.m. and the labor did end up being much longer. So when we saw that nothing was happening, that's when she did, it was probably an hour or two of pushing when, you know, it wasn't really making any progress, but they could see that the baby was very close. But she then recommended a cervical check again. And at that point, you know, after pushing for so long and exhausting myself, I was thinking, you know what, maybe now, because I'm certain that I am pretty far along. So maybe that will kind of give me like this extra second wind of, you know, energy, feeling like, okay, I'm very close, because I didn't want to be checked earlier on. I didn't want that potential to be feeling like I was let down if, you know, they said I wasn't, you know, dilated and I felt like I was further along. So I got out of the tub onto my bed. She checked me and I was 8.5, 9 centimeters. So definitely was too soon to be pushing.
Oh my God. And for 2 hours, you've been exhausting yourself, putting extra pressure. That is hard work to do from just like your muscles, from just your pure will. See? Oh gosh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that that happened.
It's okay. And I mean, I didn't have to, but yeah, when she said, you know, it might feel better, and it did, it feel like, it just felt like it was giving me an outlet. And I did think I was making progress, but I didn't know I was just spinning my wheels. So,
and you know, also, in hindsight, I realized it's so different from, you know, just, it might feel good because, you know, you feel like you're doing something. But the thing is, well, first of all, you were at that point not at all, far from ready to push because your body didn't tell you to do so. You can also, when you push with your muscles, you might actually tense against. If you have a really strong pelvic floor, if you're really like, I would say you're probably better off actually trying to relax your whole body and let your uterus, like let your womb do her work.
Yeah, definitely.
Save every ounce of your energy.
Yeah. So at that point, when she checked me and we realized I was, you know, close to 9 centimeters, and that was good news. I'm like, okay, at least that means I'm close. But it was obvious that the pushing was way too premature. But she did, at that point, she offered to, because my water, so my waters hadn't broken at that point. So she offered to break my water. And that was another thing I didn't want, but she positioned it as, you know, it may speed things up. You know, sometimes the bag can be in the way, preventing the head from, you know, fully descending. So at that point, I would take anything. You know, I was really exhausted and I'm like, you know what, let's do it. So she broke my water. I got back in the tub, labored a little bit longer. And at that point, she could tell that the head seemed like it was, you know, like they were fully, like everyone there could see the head. It was right there, but it wasn't fully coming down. So she suggested we get out of the tub again, and she would help kind of position the baby around my pubic bone. So I don't know if there's a name for that or if that's something you've ever seen done, but I had never heard of it. I didn't know it was what it was. I wasn't expecting it. But again, I was willing to take anything.
What does that mean? So, tell me what she did.
So she, and I don't really know, I wasn't looking, obviously. I couldn't see. I got out of the tub. She would tell me, like, with each contraction, she would go in and she would start kind of rotating the head around the pubic bone. I don't know if she was using her hands or if it was a tool. It was very, very painful. I had a big baby who was somewhat, you know, kind of having difficulty getting around my pubic bone.
Sounds like you're talking about is a shoulder dystocia.
it wasn't the shoulder, it was the head that was having difficulty fitting around to the pubic bone. So again, I don't know what it's called, but she
I've never heard this in all my years.
Yeah.
I don't know either what this means.
Yeah.
I've never heard that a head has a hard time getting past the pubic bone. And what
yeah.
So she would put her fingers in your vagina to do this?
Yeah. And it was by far the most intense, challenging, painful part of this birth was, you know, that part. The good news is when she was done with that, we got back in the tub and, you know, it was a couple more hours and then I was, you know, fully crowning and the head was, it worked. I mean, the head was starting to come out at that point, but getting there was difficult.
Yeah, I've never, ever heard of anything like that. Do you think she was trying to push the cervix above the baby's head? Is that what she was doing?
She didn't describe it as that. And I mean, the other, you know,
because she can't move your pubic bone. Like she can't put her
fingers. She said she just had to kind of rotate the baby's head around, like kind of assisted around the pubic bone is the way she described it. But that's as much as I know about it. And I obviously couldn't see what was happening, but that was the most challenging part of that birth experience. But after that, we got back in the tub and I remember at that point, you know, seeing the light coming through the windows. And I remember thinking like that it was just like midnight and we were celebrating it being my grandfather's birthday. And now the light, like the sun's coming up. I was like, what time is it? Cause I was so in labor land. I had no idea how much time had passed and I didn't realize it was already now 7:30 in the morning. Yeah, that was just kind of crazy because when people, you know, when I talk about that labor being long, which it's not long in terms of, I know some women are in labor for multiple days. It was about 22 hours total. I'm like, but also you'd have no concept of time, you know, when you're in that space. So it didn't feel like 22 hours. Went back in the tub and yeah, the sun was coming up and within a couple hours, so it was, 10:04 in the morning, baby was finally born. So not too far, a couple hours after, but again, I did push again for hours until baby finally came out. But when she came out, you know, pulling the baby on my chest and I just, you know, ruined the surprise, it was our little girl. I just felt like I got that wave of those hormones and oh my gosh, it was the most magical feeling, the most magical experience. And my husband and I looked at each other and we're just like, oh my gosh, like I did it. And he's like, you did it. Like you're a rock star. And, you know, looking at my baby, I was just like in awe of, you know, how beautiful she was and couldn't believe that, you know, the experience we just went through together. You know, she was working just as hard. I couldn't believe the experience we just went through to get her here. But that moment felt like, you know, laying there with her on my chest and, you know, my husband there with me, it's like, that felt like as long as the entire birth took. Cause it's like at that point, time kind of just pauses and you're just, you know, basking in that hormone love bubble. And it's all worth it at that point, you know?
Beautiful.
Hey, my lovely podcast listener. Did you know that you can work with me one-on-one? Let me share with you what that could look like. I work with women worldwide online in one-on-one sessions, from short 30-minute one-off consultations about specific questions unique to her, to packages involving many sessions spanning over pregnancy, birth, and the postpartum. We might work on facing her fears, deepening her relationship to her intuition, her body wisdom, and her baby's wisdom. Learning about her amazing body and the natural birth process, and how to prepare her body, mind, and soul for birth uniquely for her. With some women, I sit in birth debriefing sessions, helping her unpack her previous births and understand on deeper levels why things unfolded as they did, and start the healing process if she's had a traumatic birth experience in the past. With some, we plan a nourishing postpartum uniquely designed for her and her family's needs. And I journey with her and her family through pregnancy, birth, and beyond as her spiritual midwife. If this sounds like something you'd be interested in, then find out more about how to work with me at thenaturalbirthcourse.com.
That's so beautiful. Yeah, the golden hours after birth are so magical.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, so after that point, she was finally born, and birthing the placenta was another part that was kind of a challenge with the midwives I was working with. Their rule is you have an hour to birth the placenta. And I remember, you know, we were laying there with our baby and just enjoying the moment for, you know, probably 20, 30 minutes. And she kept kind of saying to me like, okay, it's been, you know, this amount of time. We only have this much amount of time left. We have, you know, only 30 minutes left. I'm like, okay, can you please stop making me feel like I'm on the clock here, because that's not going to make my body relax and that's not going to help the placenta to come out, because we all know you need those surges to start again. You need that oxytocin in order to, you know, finish the birthing process. I was trying to get my baby to latch. I was thinking that, you know, if she started feeding, then the surges would start again and I would birth the placenta, but I was having difficulty getting her to latch. So then she's like, all right, let's get up. Let's start moving around. And I was thinking, maybe I'll kind of squat, try some different positions and it'll help it fall out. So my husband was not holding the baby. I was kind of squatting and trying different positions and still nothing was working. And by that point it was like, had been 50 minutes. There was like 10 minutes left. And she's like, okay, we're going to have to administer Pitocin or we're going to have to take you to the hospital. And I was just very calmly like, no, we're not doing either of those things. Like, my placenta will come when it's ready. And that's another thing that I think my doula really kind of prepped me on is, you know, like, if you feel okay and, you know, if you are, you know, you know your body better than anyone. And I knew in that moment, I knew I felt fine. I felt healthy. I felt like the placenta was going to come. And after getting through, you know, going through the entire labor experience, and not one time, like, it was obviously very challenging, but not one time did I think, oh, I want to give up. I want to get out and I want to go to the hospital for relief. Like, I'm like, no, I'm staying in this tub. The tub was giving me relief. You know, I was there. It was challenging, but I'm like, I'm going to just get through it, you know? And I think that's something too, when you set yourself up for success, you know, being at home and not having option for an epidural around you, like, you're not going to go out of your way to go get it then. You know, you're there. You're going to just kind of get through it. I think is what most women do when they're in that experience, in that situation. So yeah, she was kind of threatening me with the Pitocin. And I just said, no, it's not happening. I'm going to get the placenta out. And then, right about on the hour spot, I told my husband, bring the baby back. I'm going to try again to get her to latch. She latched on, finally, then the surges started again. And as a surge was happening, I told the midwife, okay, they're starting again. And then she kind of did just like a gentle tug and it came right out. So it was like an hour on the dot. I was just relieved to get her off my back because I knew I did not want to end up in the hospital for something that seemed silly to me, you know, for getting the placenta out.
It is silly, and it's such a shame that it's a thing, and it's a thing even with birth center and home birth midwives, and not all, obviously, but, you know, some. And I think, again, I don't understand why home birth midwives carry this kind of policy with them. Mm-hmm. I understand that when you work, I mean, this birth center, they carry out the same policies into the home. That is the thing, isn't it? Instead of looking at a woman, like you said, like holistically, like you're fine, then time doesn't matter. It's how the woman presents holistically. How is she?
Yeah.
Is she bleeding? Is she showing signs of something's wrong? Yeah, of course, act then. Of course you want to get the placenta out. If she's fine, then she's fine. You can trust that. You see that on a woman.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it sounds like this taught you a lot, and I understand you chose a independent midwife probably for these reasons, for your second?
Yes, absolutely. And the independent midwife I chose, so she was actually someone who, she used to work at that birth center, and when I had my prenatal visits with her, she was the one I was hoping I was going to get. I knew we were very similarly minded, and she had a very, you know, holistic approach to birth. And I was hoping I would get her, but she actually left that birth center actually shortly before I went into labor. It was like a month before, and I was kind of bummed because I'm like, oh no, I won't get Emily because she's leaving, and she actually went off to be an independent midwife and you know, go out on her own. So the good part of that is that now I had the ability to, you know, hire her as an independent midwife and work with her the second time. And, you know, from the beginning, our prenatal visits were all amazing, you know, like the way she positioned any offering, she would fully go over the risks, you know, the potential risks, the potential benefits. And, you know, if I asked her, you know, what would you recommend? What would you do? She always would give me her honest opinion. And we almost always were on the same page with everything. So I knew that I was very confident that working with her the second time, it would be that experience that I wanted, and that very kind of hands-off approach and not feeling like I was monitored or I was on a certain time frame. And even talking about like the 42-week rule, like you said in the beginning, you know, with independent midwives, they're a lot more lenient with that. And they don't make you feel like as pressured or, you know, like they're kind of threatening you with that. Okay, you're going to have to go to the hospital if it's, you know, past this point. So I already just felt like, you know, when I got to the end of my second pregnancy and I didn't feel like I was in a rush, I felt like I could just relax and I knew baby was going to come whenever they were ready. And I wasn't going to be pressured into, you know, feeling like I had to do anything to speed up labor or, you know, get labor started.
Love that. So let's dive on into this birth story now. Did you have any early signs of labor approaching this time? And how many weeks were you?
Yeah, so I was, you know, right around like the 39, 40 week mark. I mean, actually a couple of weeks before that is when I started having kind of like that prodromal labor. So it was like those Braxton Hicks, and they were very faint. I knew every time I'm like, this isn't anything, but I did have, you know, those sensations. And I loved it because I'm like, this makes me feel like my, you know, my body's practicing and it's getting ready. And ideally, I feel like in a lot of the birth stories I've listened to, when they have that experience ahead of time, it seems like their labor goes quicker. It's almost like their body was kind of prepping for longer. And then in that moment, it's like just ready to go, you know? And I also did a lot of work this time with manifesting how I wanted the birth to go. Like I really thought about the timeline. I thought about, you know, what sensations I wanted to experience. And a lot of that I actually got from your podcast you did with Ellen Fisher. I remember listening to that podcast in my second pregnancy and being like, oh my gosh, she has such amazing tips and words of advice. And when she was describing, you know, really repositioning the sensations you feel during labor. And, you know, for me, I would tell myself that the sensations would feel like almost like a deep tissue massage, like that, you know, that kind of deep work that's maybe uncomfortable, but it's positive. You know, it's your body, it's your muscles working the way they're meant to. You know, it's like, it's so different. It's not pain. Pain is when something's happening to your body, something's wrong. Yeah. When it's your body working effectively to bring your baby, that's not pain. That's, you know, it's intense, but it shouldn't be painful. And I feel like a lot of, yeah, the reason we do feel it as pain is because we've been told our whole lives that it is pain. So that's obviously what we're going to feel in that moment when it happens. So yeah, I really tried to, that second time, reprogram my brain really to feel a certain way. And I just kept telling myself over and over, it's going to feel like, you know, that intensity, that energy, I'm going to feel my body moving, feel the muscles working, but it's just going to be, you know, the energetic feeling. It's not going to be painful. And I kept telling myself, and it's not that I was expecting it, but I was just going to put it out into the universe and hope for the best, that I would say my labor is going to be 5 hours. I thought that was kind of a realistic time frame to aim for. And I would just imagine it happening, you know, rolling out, you know, everyone who I wanted being in the space and just playing through that experience. And I also kind of stacked my comfort measures that I wanted to take, because with my first baby, I wanted to try like the TENS unit. I wanted to try, you know, the shower. I wanted to try the tub, but I got in the tub so early that I felt like I couldn't get out of the tub, because when I did get out, you know, to be checked or any to go to the bathroom, anything like that, when I got out of the tub, the surges were so powerful compared to how they felt when I did have the comfort of the water. the second time around, I felt like I'm going to save that for the end when I feel like if I need something to really help with the sensation, then I'll get in the tub and to get in the tub to birth. But besides that, I want to try to manage outside and just kind of feel everything. Yeah. So labor picked up. It was actually on my due date. My midwife texted me and she just said, happy due date. You know, I always recommend my families do something special to remember this day. Just kind of felt like a sweet message. And my husband and I were like, should we just go do something fun? Let's go to our favorite restaurant. We'll bring our daughter to the playground. And we just had a really fun night. We brought her and she was playing. It was a beautiful summer day in July. And we went to our favorite restaurant. And yeah, I remember getting home and it was just, I had a bath with my daughter. And I remember looking her in the face that night. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is going to be, I don't know how many more baths I'll have, you know, bathing you and having these one-on-one moments before you have a sibling. So it's funny that I did go into labor that night because I remember that day was just very like that, you know, movie-like last day of it just being us three. And also coincidentally, my sister this time had planned to just get a flight on my due date. She's like, I'll just be there. I'll help you guys get the house ready. I'll help with, you know, with Gia, my daughter. And, you know, whenever you go into labor, you go, don't feel pressured. I'll just be there for as long as, you know, you want me there. I knew my sister was getting in around 11 o'clock at night and we went to bed around 10. I remember hearing, you know, her coming through the garage and then going right back to sleep. And then around 12:30, I woke up with some sensations and I didn't know yet if it was, again, just kind of like the practice surges or if it was labor starting, but I got up and went to the bathroom and they did pick up slightly while I was on the toilet. And I'm like, I know that could be a sign that this is actually labor. And I laid back down and I remember being so tired because we'd only gone to bed like 2 hours prior. And I remember being like, all right, baby, I just need a couple hours of sleep. And then, you know, and then things can move along and I'll be ready to go. And I laid there, I put on like some sleep music to help me relax. And I just kind of was in like a half state of sleep, but the surges were kind of building and building. So it was difficult to fully fall back asleep. I laid there for about 3 hours, you know, kind of in that in between of just that deep relaxation state and maybe slightly drifting in and out of sleep for a little bit. And around 3:30, I woke up with a strong surge and I'm like, all right, I'm just going to wake my husband, tell him we should start getting the room ready. And my daughter was asleep in the bed next to us. And my mother-in-law had planned to drive up and pick her up when labor started. She lives about an hour away. So we knew we had to give her, you know, some decent notice. So I woke up my husband, he called his mom to drive up and he just kind of started getting the room ready and the birth pool blown up. And I just kind of laid there snuggling my daughter and, you know, we're very relaxed. Music is playing. And it was, you know, just those early stages. When she got there around 4:30, 4:45, my husband kind of just scooped up my daughter from bed and brought her down, you know, got her situated in the car. And it's funny because on his way up, he called my doula to give her a heads up. Mm-hmm. And when he's on the phone with her, they got back upstairs to our room where I was laboring. And by that point, I was completely vocal. It was like, the second he moved my daughter, my body just went, all right, it's time to go. And the surges just picked up strong. And when my husband was on the phone with Tanya, our doula, and she's like, is that Stella in the background? And he's like, yeah, I don't know what happened. I just left and now I got back and she's on all fours. And yeah, she's pretty loud. And she's like, okay, I'm coming over. So she called my midwife. They're good friends as well, and gave her the heads up that I was ready to go. And my husband shot a text over to my acupuncturist, who again was going to come to be at the birth with us. And yeah, I remember my doula, when my husband was on the phone with her, she was saying, if you want to, you can get started in the shower and just kind of start that as your first comfort measure, since this time I planned to kind of stack them in the order that I felt they would be kind of least to most effective based on where I was at.
Oh, I love that. So acupuncturist, you said she was at your first birth too. So did she put needles while you were in the bath?
She didn't do needles because, again, when she got there, I was already kind of in that state where it was pretty intense. And she was planning on doing needles early on if I needed them. If I was in active labor, she would just do the acupressure points. So we did the acupressure points, obviously, when I'm moving around and in that state of kind of full-blown active labor. She doesn't recommend doing actual needles, but we did the acupressure points, and she was just, you know, almost doing like doula work. She was just there to comfort me and to help and to be kind of a more of a support system for me. And then if I needed her for her actual, you know, knowledge in acupuncture and Chinese medicine, then she could be there as well. But it was more just if a situation arised that she needed to help with, then she would do, you know, needles or something as needed.
Okay, beautiful.
Yeah. So yeah, I labored in the shower for a little bit until my doula got there. And that was just such an exciting moment because obviously the first birth she missed and she was so heartbroken by that. You know, it wasn't her fault. It was just the unfortunate situation. But this time she was like, you're going to have a redemption birth. It's going to be my redemption finally being there for you. And, you know, when she got there, we were just hugging. We were so excited and so excited to, you know, this time kind of experience that journey together. Yeah, it was like, I don't know, maybe 30 minutes, an hour of being in the shower when I got out and I wanted to at that point try something different because she had her TENS unit with her. So I'm like, okay, let's go on the bed. I'll try the TENS unit. And my sister woke up too. When she got to her house, she just went to sleep and then she woke up because she heard me and she's like, oh my gosh, labor starting. So I remember I was laying on the bed. I was holding my sister's hands and Tanya had the TENS unit on me and I just had my birth playlist playing and we're, you know, just kind of singing together and swaying. And it was just such a beautiful moment, you know, with two women who I'm so close with. And I got on the birth ball and this labor, I was on the birth ball a lot. And I really felt that kind of that swaying and rocking on the birth ball was really relaxing, really helpful. And just kind of, I don't know, that motion just felt great, honestly. And I kept saying that, you know, and anytime there was like something that felt good, whether it was like someone massaging me or, you know, the swaying on the birth ball, I would just say, this feels so good. This feels so good. And it felt like that emphasis and focusing on that, those positive sensations really filtered out the intensity of the surges.
Yeah, it's so powerful. Words are spells and it's incredible how you can reframe something and the experience changes. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. And I so felt that this time, you know, I just kept, you know, focusing on those good sensations and the music. And I had these cold eucalyptus towels I had put in the fridge to have ready for birth. And my husband brought those out. And when I put that on my face and it smelled so amazing and relaxing, I'm like, oh my gosh, it smells so good. And I just kept saying that, like, oh, this smells so good. This feels so good. And just kept kind of just focusing on any little sensation or, you know, my different senses and what I was feeling and or smelling or seeing, and just kept talking about that. And yeah, it was like, before I knew it, I was like, I think I'm ready for the birth tub. So my doula was like, yeah, I think you're ready for it as well. And I remember when she agreed with me, I'm like, okay, I guess I'm, you know, must be far along, because I know that if she felt like I was still early on, she would say, no, let's do this a little bit longer and try to kind of change my direction a little bit. But she did say, she's like, how about you go in the shower for just 5 minutes? We need to fill it a little bit more. So we'll fill the birth tub a little bit more while you go back to the shower for a bit and then you'll get in the tub. So that kind of bought me another 10, 15 minutes or so. And then when it was time to get in the tub, it was like the most amazing feeling. I got in the tub and I'm like, this feels amazing. Water just, you know, that just kind of relieves all the pressure. And it just, you know, the water was like the perfect temperature and it just felt so great. I was so happy to be in the pool and also knowing that that likely meant I was close to, you know, having my baby. I just kept saying it. I'm like, I get to meet my baby so soon. I would just, you know, my husband and I would look at each other and squeeze our hands and just say, we get to meet our baby so soon. We get to find out if it's a boy or a girl. Cause this time, you know, being our second baby, it almost felt like it was more exciting. Cause the first time it's like, you know, no big deal really. We obviously would love to have a girl or a boy. And this time we were kind of hoping to have a boy just so we could experience both. So it just kind of built even more excitement for the moment of finding out. And I was in the tub for, I don't know, maybe 5 minutes before I got that urge to go to the bathroom. So I'm like, I have to get out of the tub. I have to go to the bathroom. And they're like, are you sure it's not baby's head? I'm like, no, I think I just have to go to the bathroom. So I sat in the toilet and, you know, then I thought, maybe they're right. Maybe it is baby's head. So I'm like, let me just feel. So I felt, and right there, like maybe an inch away was baby's head. I'm like, no way. Because, you know, my first labor, obviously it was hours and hours of pushing before I felt baby's head. And this time it just, I'm like, felt like labor had just started. And all of a sudden I can already feel the head is there. So yeah, that was amazing and very exciting. And also kind of, you know, that motivation, you know, feeling like it's right there.
So how many hours in are we now?
This was now about 7 a.m. So yeah, when I woke up my husband, that was about 3:30. When my doula and everyone got there, it was around 4:30. So now this had been about, you know, 2.5 hours of everyone being there and us being in my bathroom, you know, me laboring in there with everyone. And now all of a sudden I was feeling baby's head. So that was crazy. And, you know, compared to the first one, that was very, very fast. And I mean, compared to all labors, that's very fast.
And so most of that time, were you on all fours or standing in the shower?
Yeah. So in the shower, I actually brought the birth ball in there. And majority of the time I was either sitting on the birth ball, kind of rocking against the shower wall, or I was on all fours with my hands up on the birth ball, kind of like swaying that way on my knees.
So would you say that, you know, because as I understood from your first, you were mainly in the bathtub or in the bath pool?
Yes, I was pretty much in the tub the whole time.
And, you know, even though that's so relaxing, it doesn't allow gravity to help bring baby down, right?
Yes.
So that is why sometimes, like, you know, you can get in early if you need to relax to open. I mean, sometimes that does work the opposite way, but it can also mean that it takes longer because you are not getting help from gravity. And also, I was wondering, as you were, you know, taking all these surges coming through, how did you move with that? Was it different the second time around? Did you have an internal mantra? Did you use sound? Did you do relaxation? Like, what did you do? Was there something different?
Yeah. So when I would have those surges the second time, something I really thought in my brain, and, you know, I would tell myself, bring it on. I was like, I know each surge brings baby closer. I can do this. You know, it's like, I've heard some other women talk about that in birth stories. It's like when you're really ready to face them, instead of feeling like you're kind of shying away or, yes, you know, trying to kind of hide from them, it's almost like, you know, when they talk about the surge as a wave, it's like, instead of ducking under the wave, you know, being ready to ride the wave and just saying, I'm ready, you know, no matter how big the wave is, I'm ready. It's, you know, I'm stronger than this. It's my body. And I can, you know, the surges are coming from within me. And I kept telling myself that kind of mantra is, it can't be bigger than me because it is me. Yeah. Thinking like, bring it on every time before they came, it was like, I was ready, instead of feeling like I was like, no, I need a break, I need a pause before another one comes, feeling like each time I was ready to face it. Yeah. And it's like when you're like standing tall almost and like prepared for it and just telling your body, bring it on. It's like, it just, I don't know, it just feels completely different. And again, I was thinking of it as kind of just that pressure, like that, like a deep tissue massage almost, just kind of a different sensation. And I did feel like when I thought about it that way, that's how it felt.
I just love this piece of information because I think, you know, it's multi-layered why the first time usually takes much longer, right?
Yeah.
And it's because it's the unknown. It's because we don't know how we're going to react, because, you know, obviously there can be different factors like baby's position and all kinds of things. But I also really, truly believe that our mindset is everything, and that we potentially also the first time around need to go through some layers of like letting go and letting go and letting go. And like there's fear coming up, or there's resistance towards that pain, resistance towards the experience, resistance and fear. And that's also normal. Like, you know, it's a part of it and there's nothing wrong with it. But I just love what you just shared, because I think being upright like you did and also meeting every surge like that,
absolutely,
would open you so much more seamlessly than if you were like fearing the next wave or feeling, oh my God, I just can't, you know, taking so long, or can you stay over, or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, that's, I think, where I credit most of my success is, you know, that different mindset I had around meeting each surge and being ready for it. And yeah, it definitely, you know, those different positions was, I think, very helpful at gravity, helping to assist baby down. And my doula said the same thing. She said, you know, the tub can potentially slow labor. And that was another reason we agreed to try to save that for the end. And she was going to kind of try to help me. Help me with that. Yeah, this time when I did finally get in the tub, it was, you know, it was amazing because I had, you know, done the whole rest of the labor just on all fours, or the birth ball, or standing up.
Love that.
So yeah, so it was only about, you know, another 15, 20 minutes or so in the tub after I, you know, was on the toilet and I realized how close baby was. I knew this time I did not want to actively push or strain myself like the last time. That was probably my biggest lesson learned, was how much time I spent pushing, and that was really difficult for my recovery as well. It did, you know, definitely put a lot of pressure on my pelvic floor. And the second time I'm like, I want to feel, you know, the NER. I want to feel that natural expulsion reflex. I've heard so many women talk about it, and I just wanted to get to feel my body pushing my baby out. And before I knew it, you know, I'd be having a surge, and I would just, you know, get the urge to just kind of like roar. You know, I just wanted to, you know, I was very vocal at that point, and it was like those deep kind of vocal roars. And I had tried to do that actually in my first labor. I was trying to keep my voice low when I was loud. And that's what everyone, I've heard so many tips of people saying you want to keep your voice low, but I had pushed and I was loud for so long that I actually lost my voice with my first baby. So, you know, like trying to get that low, deep tone, it wasn't possible. I like had to just kind of like screech, and that was all I had left. So the second time being able to kind of roar in those end stages, while my body was just, I felt, you know, when a surge would come, it just kind of felt my body just bearing down, and felt the baby's kind of head start to crown. And I definitely did feel a lot of the ring of fire this time. I hear you ask that, you know, quite often if women feel that. And it almost is like, because the labor was so quick, that then when it got to that point, that was the only time I would say of the whole labor that I would say consider to be, you know, slightly painful, because it was intense when I started to feel the ring of fire. But I also knew that that means, you know, baby is so close. So yeah, I would say it was about 5 to 10 surges of, you know, that feeling like my body was bearing down on its own. And then all of a sudden his head was out. It was crazy. It felt like it was so fast. And again, probably just comparing it to my first experience. But so his head came out in the tub, and then this is where things actually got a bit complicated. So his head was out, and then it did kind of feel like the NER had kind of paused, and I felt like I couldn't get the breast of the baby out. I was trying to, at that point, push. Like, you know, when his head came out, I didn't do any pushing at all. It was just my body. But I know my midwife was, you know, she was hands off the entire time. She never asked me for a cervical check. She wasn't, you know, bothering me. She knew my birth plan, and she really was just there to, like you say, kind of just stand there. And she was quiet, and she just kind of, you know, just kind of watched. And at that point, I think she could tell that the shoulders were stuck. And you know, she waited a little bit, and then she, you know, after a couple minutes had gone by, she's like, we have to get you out of the tub. And she did explain to me afterwards, when she says that, and the motion of getting out of the tub sometimes will release baby and they'll come out. I don't know if you have any experience with that.
Absolutely. Yeah. What position were you in the birth tub when you were birthing his head?
Yeah. So I was on all fours, kind of leaned over the edge of the tub, like holding my husband, and I was squeezing his hands with each surge, you know, when the head was coming out. But so when she said, we have to get you out of the tub, my husband kind of panicked, and he like scooped me out. He's a big guy. He's 6'5" and he scooped me right out of the tub, like put me on the floor. And then she's kind of like, okay, well, the action of me getting out of the tub is what would have helped. So it kind of didn't help, because he kind of stepped in like Superman to help out. So they got me on the ground, and she went in there. And so I did actually, this time I had double shoulder dystocia, or the baby had double shoulder dystocia. So she went in and kind of
scooped his little shoulders, pulled the baby out, and it didn't feel like very long, but, you know, my husband was kind of panicking. I had listened to so many birth stories, and I know my doula actually with her baby had shoulder dystocia. So I did feel like I was quite, you know, knowledgeable about that. And it wasn't something that was fearful for me. But when they put the baby on my chest, it did take baby a little bit to come to. So baby was kind of blue and, you know, wasn't screaming, crying or anything like that when they came out. And again, that's something that I hear in a lot of birth stories. And I know sometimes it just takes some time. And right away they did check heart rate. Heart rate was great. And I actually put my finger out and the baby kind of gripped around my finger. And, you know, I felt that. I felt baby holding me. So I knew everything was okay. But everyone else in the room was, I could tell, like it got a little bit intense for a moment. They were kind of panicking. So my midwife did give the baby a little bit of oxygen. And I also, in that moment, like it was really crazy because I swear, like I felt my mother's presence there with us. Like I felt her there. I felt her saying like, everything's okay. I was totally calm. And I just was, it was almost like she was there, you know, with our baby, like handing him over. It almost like felt like that period, you know, those few minutes where it was taking him a while to take his first breath. It felt like it was him coming, you know, from her saying goodbye and then coming to us to meet us. And yeah, then all of a sudden, you know, baby opened their eyes and let out a little cry. And we all were like cheering, all so excited. And my husband was just like, let out this sigh of relief. He's like, oh my gosh. He's like, you've been so calm. He's like, how have you been so calm? I'm like, I just knew everything was okay. And yeah, then my husband noticed when they took the baby out to put baby on my chest, he saw it was a boy. And then I also, when the baby was laying on me, we were kind of in that state, that in between waiting for their first breath, I felt it and I knew it was a boy as well, but he was kind of all excited. He's like, guess what? It's our little boy. And I'm like, I know. So I thought I was kind of holding the surprise from him and he thought he was holding the surprise from me, which is funny. Yeah, then we just laid there and we were like, oh my goodness. Like that was at the end, it was a whirlwind, mm-hmm. but it was magical. And I was just like, how did that happen so fast? And it was so amazing. I'm like, immediately after I was like, I could birth 10 more times. Like that was amazing.
I love and, like, that.
It was crazy. Cause even after my daughter, you know, it was really long and I made it through and it was magical and it was worth it. But after I was like, I don't know if I could do that again. You know, that was really intense. And it did take, like I said, a lot of work that second time to again, listen to different stories and focus on how I was going to prepare my mind and be ready to, you know, face those sensations and everything. Yeah. The second time it was just a completely different experience. And I learned so much from the first, but what I learned from the second was that birth experience of having that really empowering, present, positive birth. I really did have that the second time. And oh my gosh, it's like, it feels like it was something that I wanted my entire life, you know, to not be scared of birth and to have, you know, a positive birth experience. And I truly, truly got that this time and was so grateful and so happy about it.
And isn't it amazing that, you know, you being a woman who was so fearful of birth had an emergency at home and did not mm-hmm. experience it at all as fearful?
Absolutely.
I love that. I love that your experience of a shoulder dystocia was magical, was held, was positive, was empowering, mm-hmm. that so many women don't have that experience when they have a shoulder dystocia, especially in hospital. Yeah. You know, and it can be scary at home. It is an emergency, you know, it's a true emergency that needs to, you know, needs help. And it can be done so beautifully. It can be done so calmly. That is, you know, that is the midwife's job, is to see and act and do it in a way. And most midwives do it like so holistically at home, so beautifully, so calmly.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That was my biggest takeaway too, is mm-hmm. I kept thinking how lucky I am to have been in that situation, you know, with the midwife I chose who handled it with such grace and handled it so, you know, as calmly as possible.
And, you know, the way my baby came out, I know that if I was in the hospital, they would have been whisked away and taken to the NICU. And, you know, just thinking that, like, wow, I can't imagine if I wasn't here, if I was in a hospital setting, this would have been a very traumatic experience. And instead, I had the polar opposite. You know, it was such a magical experience, even with, like you said, an emergency happening. So, and with that, you know, knowing that, so this baby was also, I had two big babies. Like I said, my husband's 6'5" and I'm pretty small. I'm 5'5", you know, thin. I don't have like big, you know, what they call birthing hips. I definitely do not have that. I'm definitely, you know, a sign though, that that's not something to fear. You know, I think in the hospital setting, if I had chosen that route, I imagine doctors would tell me, oh, these babies are going to be too big to birth and you're going to need a C-section. I imagine I would have been told that because I know a lot of women are.
So how big were your babies?
My second baby, my son was just about 10 pounds. He was 9'13". I wrote the conversion there for you guys. So I think that's about 4.5 kilos. Mm-hmm. My daughter was just about 9 pounds. Mm. So a little over 4 kilos. So
big, chunky, perfect, and normal. I mean, that's normal. That is not, you know, but nowadays it's become a fearful thing. It never used to be, but nowadays, mm-hmm. like if a baby is over or predicted to be over 4 kilos, it's like, whoa, it's a really big baby. Yeah, but no, you know, mm-hmm. I've attended a birth with a 5 kilo baby.
Wow, that's amazing.
I know of women who've birthed babies beyond 5 kilos, like bigger than 5.1, 5.2, 5.4. Like big babies are born and they've always been born.
Thing. Yeah.
And actually it's not that big babies, you know, that much bigger chance of having a shoulder dystocia. You can have a shoulder dystocia with a baby's 2.5 kilos, which is a very tiny baby, right? It's not about size. Nah. Not about size. There's a lot of, you know, the biggest risk of having one is to be on your back with an epidural up in stirrups with a doctor, you know, truly. The Absolutely. Best thing you can do if you have a shoulder dystocia is to be on all fours and to have a, you know, a midwife do internal if needed to do that. And that sounds like what happened to you. You know, mm-hmm. And what also she said that you didn't get to do is actually just moving your body might dislocate that stuck shoulder. But yeah. It's something that midwives are trained to handle. And, you know, most of the time it's okay. It's okay. Like birth most of the time is. Yeah.
Yeah. And like something I know I've heard you say on the podcast too, is that almost sometimes with a big baby, it, you know, they work more with gravity. So it also mm-hmm. can make them, you know, come quicker. So mm-hmm. My labor ironically ended up being about exactly like, what was it, 6 hours total, 4 hours active. So like me kind of putting out there that I wanted a 5-hour labor was like spot on, which is funny. Yeah, I think, you know, this time not being in the pool the whole time and letting the baby work with gravity, you know, he like came right out.
Yeah, and leaning into discomfort, leaning into the pain. Like I'm trying to drill this into people all the time that I work with. And like leaning into the pain is key. You don't have to call it pain, call it sensation or, you know, intensity, but that's mm-hmm. exactly what it sounded like you did. You were leaning into it. You were welcoming it.
Yeah.
Definitely. And if anyone takes anything away from this, like that is the key. It's the key. Reframing it in your mind, meeting it. And when fear comes up, if it does, like, okay, go through it, you know, meet it. Move through it, feel it, cry it out, whatever you need to do, and then go through it and lean it in, you know, lean into the discomfort. And that's the thing. If you're only in the bathtub, and I've had so many clients that, you know, I've been like, are you avoiding meeting birth right now? You know, when she's sinking down into the hot tub and she's like leaning, you know, not leaning into the pain, but kind of like leaning away from it in a sense, mm-hmm. you know, you can see that. Like, do you want to come out and go to the toilet? Maybe you want to sit there for a few contractions because that's the most uncomfortable place to sit. Like, you know, it will not be comfortable. It will be very effective.
That's my doula's top tip too. Is she's always like, you know, let's get you to the toilet, have a few good surges there, because she's like, you know, that's the best spot to really open and get those big strong ones that get baby out.
Sounds like I would really get along with your doula. Yes,
I'm sure you would.
Beautiful stuff. But So yeah, after your baby's born, how about your placenta this time?
Yeah. So, and that was something I talked about my midwife with this time around as well. I told her how in those end stages of birthing the placenta last time I did, you know, not, I didn't like how pressured I felt. So she was very, you know, a lot more relaxed about it. And we kept baby attached, you know, all the way until the, attached the cord all the way until the placenta was born. And yeah, we tried to like at first just a couple different positions because again, it wasn't happening right away. And he again was having difficulty latching at first, like my daughter did. So, you know, again, I was thinking, okay, if I can get him to latch and I can start nursing, it'll bring those surges back and I'll birth the placenta, but it wasn't working. So we got out of the tub, or sorry, we were out of the tub. We got out of the bathroom and onto my bed, and I just was kind of laying there cuddled with him. And she did try a little bit, just she pulled on it just to see. She's like, I just want to see if it's already detached, if it's just kind of, you know, sitting there. And that's, and it was already detached. It just was, you know, taking a little bit while for my body to birth the placenta. So she was, you know, also kind of, I think, less, not that she was concerned about it in general, but I think she was a lot more, you know, lenient and less concerned knowing that it did already detach. So yeah, I think it was again, about an hour, maybe a little over, when they did finally, those surges started coming again. And I told her, and she did, she pulled on it a little bit and it came right out. But this time I didn't feel like I was being pressured. It was just like she was there to assist if I needed it. And she never put that, you know, pressure. It wasn't counting down. She never told me, you have 10 minutes left. Do you have 5 minutes left? Do you have 1 minute left? It was just, you know, it happens when it happens and there's no pressure. And it was good that I just got to relax. And we all know, you know, if you're relaxing, that's what helps, you know, the oxytocin rush come, and that's what will help to birth the placenta. So, you know, it was definitely worked much more efficiently that time that I was able to relax and that my body just kind of resumed birthing when it was ready.
I love that. Beautiful. So if you had a first-time mama in front of you right now who's about to have her first baby and she really wants to have a natural and empowering birth experience, what advice and pearls of wisdom would you give to her?
I love this question, and I love hearing the advice at the end of all your episodes. I would say in terms of preparation, you know, I did a lot of preparation with my body. You know, like I said, I did acupuncture all through my pregnancy and really getting that time, that space to relax and just, you know, kind of be with myself and my baby. I did, you know, chiropractic and prenatal yoga. And I also did pelvic floor physical therapy, which no mama needs to do all the things and get worked up about it. But at the very least, you know, stretching your body and doing prenatal yoga and meditation and practicing breath work and really just being present and there with your baby and, you know, feeling your body with healthy foods, I think is so important, not only in obviously the health of yourself and your baby and your, you know, setting your pregnancy up for success. But I really do think, you know, putting in that effort really just mentally gets you in a good place and puts you there with your baby and ready to birth. And then as far as it comes to actual, you know, labor, I think the biggest advice I have from my first birth experience is setting yourself up for success, making sure you don't feel like you're on a timeline, because that's not good for, you know, starting that birth in a good place. And then with my second, being bigger than the surge, like we talked about, really facing it and knowing your strength, knowing your power, knowing that those sensations are coming from within you and they can't be bigger than you because it is you. And meeting them head on, being ready for them, welcoming them with open arms. And it's really, it's amazing the difference you feel in, you know, the actual physical sensations when you're thinking about it that way and when you're ready to, you know, take them on.
Thank you so much, Stella, for your stories and all the pearls of wisdom throughout it. It's been an absolute pleasure having you.
Oh, thank you so much, Anna, for having me. This has been amazing. I'm so grateful for the experience.
Thank you for listening. If you love this podcast, then please consider sharing it, leave a review, or make a contribution on our Patreon page.
And if you want to connect on social media, then find the podcast on Instagram as The Natural Birth Podcast. Thank you for listening.